Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio. My name is Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX. The following articles are from the February 2024 The Spectrum Monitor, and we'll begin by finishing the remainder of Amateur Radio Insights by Kirk Kleinschmidt, NT0Z. Can JS8 call take the sting out of K1JT's deadly legacy? Would I return to having a Morse requirement for licensure? No, despite the fact that 90% of my operating to date has been via Morse. Would I mandate testing at FCC field offices? Not necessarily. But what I would do is eliminate the question pool system that, from my perspective, affords too easy access to an amateur radio license. As I recall, those testing changes were driven by the fact that the FCC lost the resources to manage the amateur radio service on such a granular level, and largely lost interest in amateur radio as a ready resource of trained communicators. Missed QSOs. Because of back-to-back dismal solar cycles from 2003 to 2022, approximately, an entire generation of hams lost access to the easy and plentiful SSB and CW QSOs hams previously enjoyed for decades. It's no wonder that poor propagation conditions probably drove the development of below-the-noise digital modes. Other than the low, medium-frequency, high-frequency bands, plus VHF-UHF, which is largely unaffected by the solar cycle, HF conditions were truly dismal unless you lived in EA-8 land, which has propagation no matter what. Until recently, countless beginning hams never experienced an open HF band that was swimming in juicy signals, perhaps open round the clock, like many a season on 20 meters in the good old days. They didn't chat with Japanese hams most days after school, as I did as a teenager. Nor did they chat with European hams most Sunday mornings, often with 5 to 10 watts and a lowly dipole antenna for the several years I was in college. Millions of QSOs simply never took place during those dark radio days, and amateur radio was somehow stunted because of it. Our tree rings were spaced very close together. High anxiety. While the HF bands were essentially dead for nearly 20 years, young people mostly stopped talking, period. Calling people below a certain age on the phone is now considered de classe. You have to text first, then call if you get permission. If you simply call, most calls will simply go unanswered, even in a professional, commercial sense. Rag chews are still rag chews if you can find or create them, but back in the day, even quickie QSOs, DX QSOs included, always contained pleasant, friendly remarks, operator names and locations, etc. Pleasantries were the norm. Outside of established contests, we didn't just grind out contest-style QSOs like we often do today. FTXX is the pinnacle of this, as only call signs, signal reports, and grid squares can be exchanged between our PC proxies. On average, young people today are quivering with anxiety, dread, self-doubt, and fear. It's no wonder why they don't talk. They're literally afraid of everything. Social media, self and gender identity issues, modern parenting, bullying, and climate crises are involved, among other factors. Researchers know that, when compared to previous generations, statistically and on average, that modern young people don't date, they don't get married, they don't have kids, they don't, can't buy houses, and they simply don't thrive like we used to. It's quite a challenging situation. One research group that studies the experiences and attitudes of young people over many decades surveys a large group every year and asks teenage participants to write about experiences that were truly scary. In the 50s through the 80s, the kids wrote about surviving car crashes or dragging someone to safety from a burning building. Many of today's teens answer the same question with unfathomable responses such as, "I had to go outside by myself," or, "When I got to school in the morning, the doors were locked." These experiences cause the same levels of fear and anxiety across the respective generations. Wow. On average, young people seem to be in terrible straits. Young hams must be included in the statistical mix somewhere, somehow. But they're not talking about it or anything. We seem to be slipping into a non-conversational ham radio future, and FTXX-style operating reinforces that nicely. Not every young person spends all day quiet quitting or hiding in a safe, judgment-free space. So if you are a confident, thriving, and well-adjusted young person, and a ham, in a future that may see me living in a nursing home, you will probably be president. I hope so. Please remember that I gave you an attaboy here today. Scofflaws wanted. Modern digital modes such as FTXX use space-age encoding, modulation, and DSP decoding techniques to eke out fantastic improvements in signal-to-noise ratios that allow radio communication over propagation paths that won't support SSB or CW contacts. That's the awesome part. Taking advantage of these techniques, however, requires long integration times that preclude real-time communication of random information. Most FTXX QSOs require super accurate time syncing and back-and-forth transmission windows from 15 seconds to several minutes, with no chatting allowed. The only thing that keeps the entire process from being completely automated is the often ignored FCC rules that limit unattended operation on most HF frequencies, and the fact that the software has a send button that must be clicked in real time every now and then by the control operator or a computer script. K1JT's Whisper software, Weak Signal Propagation Reporter, is similar. Many ops run their Whisper stations unattended 24/7, whether it's legal or not. Because many Whisper stations run milliwatts instead of kilowatts, the effects are minimized, but the rules are the rules, right? Whisper is an amazing tool that has already added to our understanding of global propagation science and practice. It's like a public high-tech chirp sounder network that can map existing propagation modes and paths in near real time, while uncovering details we hadn't even imagined. But Whisper isn't really a QSO mode, because the integration periods are even longer than those for FTXX, which already limit or eliminate data exchanges. Still, among hams who don't really want to talk anyway, these new modes may be just what the doctor ordered. The bottom line is, despite FCC rules to the contrary, a great many digital ops run their FTXX stations on autopilot, which is a clear rules violation unless the operation takes place on the small set of HF frequencies set aside for unattended operation. Of course, none of the FTXX calling frequencies are in those band segments. And even then, the rules specify that, in most situations, one remote station must be interrogated by the other. Beaconing, as it were, isn't allowed. The large ham magazine spotlight FTXX in some way in almost every issue. But discussions of and guidance about unattended operation, etc., are mostly or completely non-existent. The same goes for the clear requirement for amateur radio balloon launchers to provide for telecommand. the ability to turn off the craft's transmitter remotely. The rules are confusing and potentially full of loopholes. We need definitive guidance. The FCC barely tolerates amateur radio. Despite all of this bad behavior, it's almost impossible to actually be cited for most any of these aforementioned unattended activities. FCC enforcement of amateur radio is mostly non-existent, unless you're willfully interfering with public safety communications or commercial broadcasters. The agency has slashed its field offices and field engineering enforcement staffers to historic lows. And speaking of engineering staffers, back in the day, the FCC was staffed and led by engineering types and subject matter experts who were close to the issues and the technologies. Whereas today, cell phone industry lawyers seem to almost exclusively helm the agency that defines our destiny as radio hobbyists and internet users. Amateur radio is far less relevant and less important to government, military, and law enforcement these days. Ubiquitous global communication technologies have captured the imagination and the mindshare when it comes to served agencies that traditionally relied on amateur radio. This pendulum swings back and forth in relatively slow arcs. When hams provide disaster communications, we're praised, of course, but our relevance in the halls of power is still waning. If something really big happens, a high-altitude nuclear detonation, of course it will be hams to the rescue, as usual. Despite technological advances and global organizations of service-oriented hams and ham groups, the bedrock of ham radio emergency comms often comes down to one ham or a few hams in an affected area getting on the air from whatever the ground zero event happens to be. Not with Clover, FTXX, or any newfangled systems, and almost always without any specific emergency comms training, but with a paddle or a mic, usually a mic. This was true 80 years ago, and it's just as true today. Well, save for the fact that the FCC doesn't seem to care either way. How do we know this? Let's look at the evidence. The FCC unloaded the burdens of amateur radio testing and licensing and gave the responsibility to the amateur radio community itself. It has mostly done the same thing with amateur radio enforcement, which, outside of a few high-profile interventions every now and then, is also practically handled by hams in the volunteer monitoring program and a few similar efforts. You don't give away control of things that you care about. It's that simple. The FCC also started charging real money for ham licensure, and it takes its sweet time, many years even, when considering amateur radio regulatory petitions, which essentially seem to be viewed as nuisances by the agency. I could go on, but suffice it to say that, while the FCC may not want amateur radio to disappear, it doesn't seem to devote much time and energy to our pursuits. Give our bands to religious broadcasters? The ARRL and other groups fight tooth and nail to preserve spectrum space. But if everything migrates to FTXX-style operation, ham bands can be tiny slivers of their former glory. Lots of Digimode QSOs fit inside the space of a single SSB QSO. And because you often can't hear the signals with your ears, you have to hover around a calling frequency anyway. So, who needs all that empty space? Religious broadcasters, that's who. No need to call CQ when AI helps out. Even if the ham bands stay big, we wouldn't need to cluster around calling frequencies if we simply have our PCs coordinate our QSOs on the internet before automatically switching our radios to an agreed-upon frequency so our PCs can work each other and tell us all about it. And in another year or two, when the various AIs have grown up just a little bit, we can easily limit our QSOs to groups of whitelisted friends, members of a certain ham club, rifle association, sports team, political party, etc. In the blink of an eye, multi-mode skimmers will soon decode, index, sort, store, and publish every Morse, digital, and voice QSO on the planet in near real time, whether in the clear or obscured by proprietary data modes. If you think the influence of DX clusters has been a net negative, as I do, you ain't seen nothing yet. When AIs can cross-reference the amateur licensing databases with those of political parties, schools, clubs, groups, courts, hospitals, mental health clinics, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, dating sites, bank accounts, porn site memberships, all of it, you will be able to see into other hams' lives in an unprecedented way, as they chat and call CQ in near real time, and filter your on-air activities accordingly. Want to have a QSO with a blue-eyed Gemini who owns a 1969 Camaro and used to have a drug problem? Easy. Your radio AI will watch the internet-based feeds from Skimmer Nexus, and when a ham who meets the criteria is calling CQ, or has told his radio AI that he's merely willing to have a QSO, the two AIs will quickly check propagation from DC to daylight, decide upon a mode and frequency, tune the respective radios there, notify each participant, and the contact will commence when all parties are present. If language is a problem, the AIs will translate back and forth. If all parties aren't present, and if unattended operation has been enabled, the AIs will simply work each other, and the so-called operators can later decide if the contact was satisfying, enjoyable, or whether it was amateur radio at all. If no propagation path exists, the AIs can simply facilitate an internet-based chat or video session between the parties, perhaps later making an AI-to-AI unattended radio contact for good measure. If hams haven't yet built the multi-mode skimmer hardware, associated networks, and long-term data storage, they will. Governments use the technology already and have been hoovering up billions, trillions of conversations, phone calls, websites, chat logs, social media postings, and historical data points that can be retroactively parsed by near-future AI systems, because present systems aren't quite yet able to process data on that scale or crack advanced encryption on the fly. They will, however, and when they do, secrets will be revealed. In fact, secrets that aren't non-digital and or buried in a coffee can in the backyard may no longer exist beyond AI maturity. This is so scary and interesting, I may try to cover it here in the future if the AI lets me. This is not science fiction. This is today, or 6 months from now. Does the paradigm shift to FTXX-style operating make this possible? Not by itself, of course, but it's at least a foot in the door. Lace up your boots and grab onto something solid, because sooner or later, this is going to be a wild ride. Antenna here is mobile whip and a balcony railing. Because of deed restrictions, the prevalence of draconian HOAs, and the intense pressure against visible antennas, etc., the same generation of hams who never really had access to cooperative, consistent HF propagation also came up without knowing what it's like to operate with real antennas. I can no longer count the number of newbies who have asked me whether the small, expensive, portable antenna systems designed to be used by backpackers from mountaintops are good for use at home in their backyards. TLDR, they're not. As you may know, antennas define our experience of amateur radio. And while hams from my generation are dreaming about tall towers with stacks of big yagis, because we already have real outdoor dipoles and loops, many newbies are dreaming about a too low wire dipole hidden in their backyard trees, or outdoor antennas of any type. And while they dream, they're messing with what are essentially expensive non-antennas, and they're wondering why HF operating isn't so nifty. These new hams are often surprised when I tell them that if I could have a stack of killer antennas on top of a killer high tower, I'd gladly trade my fancy new transceiver, any fancy new transceiver, for a 1970s Kenwood, Heathkit, or Yaesu rig, which they view as anachronistic and completely useless. You can make up for a compromised radio, but you can't make up for a compromised antenna. Or can you? Actually, if the machine-only aspects of emerging digital hamming can be tempered with a little humanity, the crappy antenna scenario can be somewhat mitigated by digital technologies such as FTXX, which offer 20 to 30 dB performance improvements over traditional SSB and CW, which is a potentially huge equalizing factor. So at long last, dear reader, after pages of doomsayings and potentially half-baked rantings about the state of our glorious hobby, the light at the end, beginning, of the tunnel may already be available and free of charge. The mode is JS8, and the software to use is JS8 Call. JS8 and JS8 Call to the rescue? If it's not torturously clear by now, my beef with the fantastic technology underlying FTXX operation isn't its outstanding technical achievement and innovation. It's the fact that no random information, person-to-person communication, is exchanged during FTXX contacts between PCs on each end of a radio link between them. No pleasantries, no chit-chat, no nothing. Our involvement in the process isn't even secondary. It's completely unnecessary. What we need, then, is a way to leverage the innovation and performance of FTXX while adding a pinch of keyboard-to-keyboard conversation between the hams on either end. JS8, JS8 Call, does this. It's not perfection, but it's a fantastic step in the right direction. It might even be the dawn of the thing that saves us in the end. This from a guy whose somewhat distant relative, unfortunately distant, modernized, monetized, and popularized RTTY starting in the 1920s with the formation of Teletype Corporation. That Ed Kleinschmidt sold his company to AT&T for millions, while my Ed Kleinschmidt was simply a balding grandpa who could also speak German and would sometimes translate German-language SWL broadcasts for me when I was 12. I love you, Grandpa, but dang. JS8, JS8 Call Overview. According to the developer, Jordan Scherer, KN4CRD, JS8 and JS8 Call started as an experiment to pair an HF keyboard-to-keyboard messaging system with a robust weak signal data protocol, which in this case is WSJTX. Jordan is quick to remind everyone that his work on the tweaked protocol and the software itself is inspired by WSJTX, FLDigi, and FSQ Call, and exists because of the coordinated assistance of many amateur radio coders and contributors. Technically, JS8 Call, a derivative of WSJTX, is open source, free as in beer, and is licensed via GPL version 3. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio. My name is Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.